Here's how futures settled this Friday afternoon in Kansas City. March wheat, 639 and a half up two. July, 655 and a quarter up 1.5. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 583 and three quarters up 4.5. July, 620 up five. March corn, 583 up four. May, 591 and three quarters up four. July, 598 and a half up 4.25. And go out to December, 548 up 4.75. January soybeans, 1130 up 18 and a quarter. March, 1139 and a half up 18 and a quarter. May, 1150 and a quarter up 18 and a half. July, 1159 and three quarters up 17 and a half. January soybean meal, 290.30 up 7.40. January soybean oil, 49.55 up 57. December live cattle, 118.15 down 60. And February, 118.50 down 65. January feeders, 143.05 and a half down 92 and a half. And February lean hogs at 83.15 down 227 and one half. And that's Friday's settlements in Kansas City and Chicago. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
So I was watching the futures throughout the day. We could just rally soybeans oh so far and pull up, I guess, along with it corn and as well as wheat, and then no further. About noontime, that was about it.
No, that's exactly right, and it's interesting because the March corn and the March wheat, both down 11 to 12 cents for the week, both of them right around that 583 level. So you see they continue to carry their parity relationship with one another, and so they pull and tug on one another. And I think between that, and I got the sense this week, Dave, that the trade in general, whether it was people I talk directly to or Newswire people that I speak with, I think the sense is right now is that we are now seeing production losses in the soybeans when it comes to southern Brazil, whereas with the corn and with the wheat, the weather may be leading us down that path to production losses in the future, but right now we aren't actually losing any yields or losing any production, and that kind of corresponds with clients I work with down in Paraguay and southern Brazil that they have told me this week that if they don't get rains, the next meaningful rains in the next 7 to 10 days, they are going to be looking at losses, potential production losses, as high as 25%, and that's something that I think caught the trade by surprise and was able to divert the attention of the trade from the outside markets in the soybeans, whereas with the wheat and the corn, the weather news isn't powerful enough, I don't think, to offset the outside market factors. And then we had the Informa numbers come out as well, and they increased the corn estimate by about 390,000 acres versus their previous estimate. They dropped the beans dramatically. They went from 76.1 million acres down to 74.6, and I think that in the later part of the session allowed the beans to stay strong, even though corn and wheat traded negative on the session.
At most corn acres since World War II, 1944, and all you say make January soybeans pretty attractive, 23 cents to the positive on the week. And I suspect there was some spreading going on between corn and soybeans today.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I think the last 45 to 60 days, traders were probably long corn and short beans because they were so negative, the bean demand, and they kept seeing the supply-demand numbers going up for the beans with USDA. I think that idea has probably completely shifted 180 degrees at this point. And you know, from where I sit and traveling around the country and starting to travel a lot, you know, in the early part of the winter now, I'm getting a strong sense that it's going to be extremely hard to get those big of corn acres. The 93.5 that we had in 2007 is going to be hard enough to get, and to be able to get 94.4 million and not do it at the expense of some other commodity or some other crop like cotton or like wheat or like soybeans, I find that to be a pretty tough thing to overcome, that you're going to probably have to rob Peter to pay Paul if you're going to get those kind of corn acres. And I think especially since the market fall in prices has occurred and we're seeing now production potential start to be questioned as far as what's going on in South America and some of these other things that are outlying issues, fertilizer prices, cash rents, things like that, I think maybe Informa, and that this is part of the reason I think they probably dropped their bean acreage substantially, is they're probably dealing with more of a reality of what prices have done the last 30 to 45 days, where their earlier estimates were probably based upon much higher prices. So I think these numbers are a moving target still. I don't think they're hard at all at this point.
Well, certainly weather will have something to say about it come spring as well. I wonder, though, if there will be either explicitly or implicitly, you can argue, you know, about this battle over acreage. Is it there? Is it not? Do people stay in the rotation or not? But given what we know thus far, it just seems to me, and maybe you can answer too, that there's less likelihood for a quote-unquote battle than in previous years.
I think that's a fair assessment, unless we see a reduction in production in South America's beans. And then we also couple that with 2 to 3 weeks down the road, a return to La Nina right when Argentina is starting to pollinate. I think that's probably the biggest issue yet to play out in the supply-demand fundamentals that could increase and put premium back into the corn and bean markets relatively quickly. And I think the market this week started to sense the idea that, hey, wait a minute, if they miss all these rains in southern Brazil and USDA comes out in February or January and starts lowering Brazilian production and tries to do that so that they can get ahead of what's going on in the weather, that means there's potential less competition from South America when it comes to China and their soybean demand. And then that all of a sudden changes the origin of where China purchases their beans from back to the United States. So I that's why it goes back to, in this next 30 to 45-day time period, it seems like the timing and the oversold conditions and the way the grain index charts looks and the way the commodity index chart looks and some of these other issues like the funds being on the sidelines for so long, that you've got many, many factors out there that would suggest that there's not going to be a lot of follow-through selling pressure at this point until we know more about the supply-demand on the micro-fundamental side. So that means, like we talked about this morning, all you have to overcome, as I say that laughingly, but all you have to overcome is the EU crisis, then all of a sudden the sun comes out again, and all of a sudden the trade starts to think about supplies and how we're tight again. And so I think that's not too hard of an argument to make at this point, I don't think.
We got about 40 seconds or thereabouts left. What is the most important thing that you can tell hedgers to manage risk?
Well, I think the key is the technicals. They have been the best thing to look at for the last, really, 120 days, and that goes back to the dollar technicals, the currency technicals, because they are the most efficient markets, in my view. So if we could get a top in the dollar and a bottom in the euro and get the euro back above 135, I think that would change your trend and your market bias on the outside markets. That, coupled with a buy signal in some of these commodity index charts, I think that would give us a nice technical base to allow that investment fund to come back in and buy.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Lafayette, Indiana.